are back at the Real Investment Hour. Boy, we got a full crowd. We got a full crew here. And I'm always so excited when Sarge is on. I'm like a little kid. I'm like Gomer Pyle when Sarge is on.
Shazam.
Oh, my.
Sarge, you are everywhere, man. You are like, you're on Fox and then CNBC, and you're, I mean, every day you're making multiple appearances on everything. I can't keep up.
Oh, neither can I.
I'm surprised you still have a voice.
It does get kind of funny sometimes. You almost turn the wrong way half the time to see who's knocking on your door. But we get through it, and we get through these markets.
Hey, a couple of things I want to say is, hey, look at what we predicted on that tweet today. You're going to talk about the market rebound, remember?
Yeah,
how look about at that. How, yeah, my magic eight ball was right on target.
That was beautiful. I mean, we regained half of yesterday's losses.
Yeah, I think it's all because of that tweet. Might as well connect this stuff, you know.
Most likely.
Correlations and all that. And one thing I was saying, because we have John in the studio and Danny in the studio, and we try to write a lot for Real Investment Advice, and I was just saying how much I always enjoy your writing. It's really punch, 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 hit, punch. I mean, all the words you use and everything you do is get right to the point and what you're doing right there in the trenches. So I thought this was obviously this is a great time to have you on. So first of all, how do people read your stuff that you write?
These days I'm over at thestreet.com, so I'm working with Jim Cramer over there. So my daily market recon is part of the Real Money site, and the stocks under 10 portfolio that I co-manage with Chris Versace is also part of the premium site.
And we have Chris on the show too. Appreciate that as well with his thematic investing. Overall, boy, I mean, Cramer had the biggest cup of coffee today that I've ever seen. His whole face disappeared. When he took a sip.
Yeah, he didn't get much of a break. I mean, he was trying to bask in the Super Bowl victory because he's like one of the biggest Eagles fans I've ever known.
Yeah, so I'm crying in the stands there.
Yeah, I think CNBC had to rush him back on Monday a little faster than because he was in Minneapolis. And then the market fell apart on Monday, and I think they rushed him home so he could get on television.
Well, if there are, say, three or four memorable points today after this roller coaster of 29, 30 times as the market changed direction. What went through your head when you saw this today?
I just got so angry at the algorithms and the electronic trading because it's to the point now where it's overbearing. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when it's going your way, it's almost the Dow is moving 75, 80 points when it is violent in minutes, in a minute. It's almost incredible. You think the index is up 30. Next thing you know, it's down 50. I mean, and we saw that the day before when the Dow hit 25,000 and the S&P hit 2,700 almost at the same time. All these stop orders were elected, and the algos feasted on them and took them down as far as they could take them before picking them off. Mm-hmm. And it's just not the way it was supposed to be. Back when we traded like human beings, face to face. The market might get volatile, and I know there were some people that had some beef with those guys, but there were people that would put their hands up and say, oh, you're not taking me down that far. I'm walking away from this trade. And they wouldn't allow themselves or their customers to be taken advantage of so poorly. Mm-hmm. And that's the algorithms just seem they've taken over here. There's less human involvement, and I think we really need to reestablish that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different than when you're trading under that buttonwood tree. I mean, it's changed.
Oh yeah,
and you've been on Wall Street that long. You've been on Wall Street that long. So, and I agree with you. We were just talking about the algorithms, right, John?
Yes.
You know, and how that can shake out and unfair to retail investors who are trying to invest long term to hit certain goals. So it takes, and we might now be going into a period where the market's going back to what it does. Right, a 5 to 7%, 10% move is pretty much price of admission, as we were saying. If you can't handle that heat, you need to get out of that kitchen. It's just not right for you. But it's been so long since that occurred that it's very tough or challenging for, you know, individual investors to maybe stick it out.
That's a new environment. We know that the government's going to have to borrow a lot of money. So we know that interest is going to be upward pressure on interest rates. We know that tax cuts, while they are good to get the economy growing, aren't really going to help all that much in that regard. So I think we have to adjust. Will there be inflation? I don't know if there will be. There's really no evidence yet
Correct. Of
that much of an increase in inflation, except for the FOMC statement, which kind of warns you that there's going to be some inflation later this year. And I think that Jay Powell might be a little more aggressive on this than, say, a Janet Yellen or a Ben Bernanke, where they were academic economists. I think that they might be a little more cautious, where someone with a business background is more likely to confront the problem and try to solve it. So it's like going to a surgeon when you're sick. He wants to operate. So I think he might just, when he sees a little inflation, he might say, well, this is what you do. You raise rates, and that's how you control inflation. So I think he might be more aggressive in that regard, even though everyone perceives him as a Yellen clone.
And I was going back and forth this morning with Danielle DiMartino Booth, who's been on the show, obviously, and the author of Fed Up, one of the best books if you want to know what's going on regarding the underbelly of the Fed. And I just said, you know, Powell doesn't seem like the type that's going to get spooked by normal gyrations in the market and provide support. He doesn't seem to be that type. He seems to let the free markets, or will allow the free markets to do what they're supposed to do. And maybe the market's realizing that he's just not going to be that kind of support for them.
Well, they're realizing
well.
That the Fed isn't going to be there, really, as it yep. once was. And once we get to about April, the balance sheet management will actually be a net extractor of liquidity out of the economy.
Yep.
So at this time, while the Treasury is going to need to borrow so much more money, the Treasury market is not going to have its biggest buyer in the marketplace.
That's right. That's
and you're
right.
not going to get the help from Europe either, because the ECB is also going to have to start moving in that direction. So it's definitely going to be just the supply and demand equation is going to demand a higher interest rate, I believe, for at least the longer dated bonds.
Well, and it's a challenge because you have the economy picking up some traction. You've got some wage growth out there, the most we've seen since 2009 year over year. And it's sort of it's confusing and very counterintuitive to think that what's good for Main Street or the economy may not be good for Wall Street, and that this ultimately to get out of low rates, cheap money. I mean, this central bank detox, though necessary, is going to be tougher than people realize.
Folks are going to have to reacquaint themselves with fundamental analysis.
It's just what I put in the report for tomorrow. Guess what? Fundamentals matter again, or might matter again, and that's.
Well, I think they do. I think you're going to have to figure out for stock pickers, which I know there's not a whole ton of us out there anymore, but I've always been a stock picker.
Mm-hmm.
I you have to know your way around a balance sheet. You have to understand debt ratios, current ratios, quick ratios. You have to understand all those things that you probably haven't looked at in a long time because your stocks went up even if they had a poor debt situation. And you have to look at the revenue numbers and whether they're growing, what parts of the firm are growing. You're going to have to read these things or listen to them when the calls come out. So it's a lot of work. And some people in the modern era just want to throw the whole thing into a ball of wax. But as you saw today, that doesn't always work, especially if you don't really understand what you're investing in.
And you're going to have to apply a real...
up on those guys.
You're going to have to apply a real discount rate to any future earnings estimates you make on a company. It can't, the discount rate has to be meaningful now. It can't just be one or something.
No, I mean, and look what happened with the VIX today, and with the inverse and short ETFs and ETNs. I do round out my portfolio with ETFs, but I really don't delve that far into them. I prefer to be my own ETF. But if you're playing with those kinds of instruments, and you don't really understand the risk, and you probably don't understand the risk, because even professionals don't truly understand the risk most of the time, then you really don't go there. I mean, something like the XTN, like the transport ETF, that's fine. But if you're three times short the transport index or something like that, well, that's I don't think that's appropriate for the retail trader, or even most times the professional trader.
Absolutely. Well, your observations about volume today, and what I noticed, I didn't spend as much time, obviously, as you would on this. Did you see some nice rebound in the market leadership as far as the leaders that have been breaking down a bit? Did you see some positive momentum there and the breadth of what we saw? What are your thoughts about the sort of the underneath of this big move we've seen today?
Well, I like that the discretionaries were leaders. I like that tech was a leader. I those are areas that rely upon growth. I think almost everything else pretty much did well also, except for the bond proxies, the utilities, yep, and the REITs. But it was overall a good day. I'm disappointed in energy. I would like to see WTI crude hang on to that 64 handle, but it doesn't seem to be able to do so. I believe 64 is a key gateway between 60 and 68. So if it's resistance, we're going to 60. If it's support, we're going to 68. And energy has been one of my plays this year, so I would very much like to see that 64 level become support. During this sell-off in energy here, I laid into Exxon, which I had not had a position in Exxon all this time. I've basically been playing Apache and Schlumberger. Mm-hmm. So I picked up Exxon. I figured it was so cheap. They're paying a 3.5 dividend. I figure even if I'm wrong, they're going to pay me four times a year. So if I added that to the stable. But tech is where I really have my largest overweight investment right now, and it's mostly in the semiconductors, and I added IBM to the stable because I like their blockchain exposure.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about that as well when we get back from the break. Again, you're listening to The Real Investment Hour with trader and prolific writer Steve Guilfoyle, and we'll be right back.
Lance Roberts' blog. It's required reading for the informed investor. Catch it today at realinvestmentadvice.com.